Well, hello and a very warm welcome to our podcast, Successful Student Transitions, A Time to Thrive. It's hosted by me, Elizabeth Gillis and Louise Wiles. And in the podcast, we aim to be a companion for young people when they step out of school and go into the world of work or study, and we help them thrive in different environments. And recently, we've been focused on the transition to university, which is described as an acute stressor due to the initial intense strain on well-being. And students really struggle in adjusting to a new place, new people, new things, and everything that makes you be a new student at university. They're making more decisions about what and how they want to be in this next stage. So our work, Louise and I, we think it's about helping students especially kind of prime themselves into the mess and magic that's part of this transition experience. And today I'm so delighted and excited to talk with Dr. Diana Hill. And Diana is based in Santa Barbara, California. I can only imagine it's kind of sunny there at the moment, is it, Diana?
Yeah. Yes.
She's a clinical psychologist, international trainer, and sought-out speaker and leadership coach on WISE Effort, which I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit more about in the podcast, and is kind of based in acceptance and commitment therapy. And her goal is to help clients find meaning, fulfillment, and connection so that they can feel more productive, aligned, and effective in all their aspects of lives. I'm just going to say it now, but check out our podcast, WISE Effort. It's a great listen. She has a number of great publications, including an ACT Daily Journal. I have it and use it. Thank you, Diana. So Diana, I won't say any more, but welcome to you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to this conversation today because I want you to be sharing your wisdom and practice to this kind of area of, you know, students going off to university. And of course, you're in America and, you know, we're talking about the UK here. But I think there are a lot of similar things that happen wherever you are going off into this university, you know, experience. And I wanted to just start off, if I can lead the discussion to start with, if I can start off with one of your ideas from the ACT Daily Journal about preparing the ground. You know, it's a bit like your metaphor of planting. Before you even plant seeds, if you've got your vegetable garden, you've got to tend the soil to create conditions that will help your plants not just grow, but thrive and be resilient when there are inevitable challenges. So this is a little bit about a link with this nicely when students are going off to university. Can you say a bit more about that, Diana?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that university begins, right? It begins when you start percolating around where am I going and why? And there's practical preparing of the ground that I'll work with when I'm working with college students or college-bound students on things like, okay, so do you know how to design your day in a way that works for you? What is your chronotype in terms of when is the best time for you to go to sleep and wake up? And, you know, do you know how to make yourself a meal? All those sort of basics. Can you work the laundry machine? The basics, right? And there's a varying degree of skill sets that students are prepared for. And it can feel really, you can feel really unmoored when you're in college environment and you don't have some of those skill sets in place. But then there's the psychological preparing of the ground, which I think is really important because so much becomes groundless when you're in this transition. And that psychological preparing of the ground includes things like, how are you talking to yourself? Do you have an inner voice, tone that is encouraging and kind and motivating? Or is this ground kind of full of junk, you know, trash, the way that you speak to yourself? There's also a psychological preparing of the ground in terms of how do you respond to setbacks and change and conflict? Do you have the communication skills to communicate with a roommate, to communicate with your professors? And then there's a psychological preparing of the ground, I think, around your values, knowing what you care about and how to know when you're out of alignment with them and how to get back in alignment with them.
I mean, a beautiful kind of like overview of that, because I think from my kind of experience in people who are helping support these young adults go off to university, there's a lot about the practical stuff and less than the psychological.
Yeah. Well, I used to work at when you get your PhD here in the US in clinical psychology, you do 5 years of academic work, research, and then you do a year of internship where you go to work as a clinician. And I did my year at UC Davis in the College Counseling Center. And so that year, it was seeing students that were coming in. And most of the students that were coming in were the first year students. And they were coming in for all sorts of reasons. They were coming in because maybe it was their first time on campus and they were having a lot of conflicts with their roommates, or maybe something really horrible was happening at home. Their parents were getting a divorce and they were at college and they didn't know if they wanted to go back home or not. Mm-hmm. And then there was all this stuff around, how do I find my classes? And I'm too stressed out because there's too much on my plate and I don't know how to sort through all of this. And yes, we get the practical, you know, here's how to set up your schedule on the online system. But what they weren't getting in the university system was, what do I do with this inner world? Like all the turmoil that I feel. And I'm also figuring myself out, right? I'm figuring out for the first time, I'm kind of really free to ask myself, what is it that I want to do? How do I want to spend my energy? Where do I want to go? I feel pulled and pressured to do this by my parents, pulled and pressured to do this by my peers. But what does my voice say? And it's a really beautiful time to start to explore that.
I think you're right. It's an opportunity to do some of the stuff that you want to do and be open to do those kinds of things. Louise and I have been interviewing lots of students at various parts, stages of their university career. And one quote always stands out for us so strongly. It's a young woman, Maya, and she says, "School got me into university, but never helped me be there." Like, kind of like that, you know. So there's a prime time for kids to be understanding and learning it, you know, while they're doing all their academics, to do the other stuff, which is going to kind of see them thrive. It's not just the academics, it's all that kind of psychological and the social stuff that's going to help them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about, or speak to me a little bit about, this notion of kind of self-care, how would they know about looking after themselves and caring for themselves?
Well, I like to make a bit of distinction between self-care and self-compassion. Actually, they're very similar words, but they have a little bit of differentiation between them. So to take a kind of psychologically sophisticated look at these terms, self-care is, what are you doing to care for yourself? You know, are you getting enough sleep? Are you taking downtime? Are you, during your lunch, putting your phone down and actually eating and giving yourself a chance to just be present with yourself for a few minutes, right? That's self-care. But self-compassion is a little bit different. And actually, I've gotten more on the self-compassion bandwagon than even the self-care one these days. Because self-compassion is about, how are you treating yourself mm-hmm. in the moment when you don't have bubble baths and bath salts and, you know, essential oils? How are you when you go up to talk to a professor and maybe you need to ask for some extra time on a paper that you're writing because maybe you were sick? What's your internal dialogue like? Is it one that is saying to you things like, it's understandable that you need extra time. Everybody needs extra time sometimes. Your professor is here to help you. They want you to learn. Or is it saying things to you like, you are so weak for having to do this. They're never going to be flexible with you. They're judging you. And just that internal dialogue of how we speak to ourselves. Are we compassionate? Is our tone kind? Is it the sort of motivating? Can make mm-hmm. a big difference in how strong we feel when we're facing adversity. Yeah. So self-care is about the kind of nuts and bolts of caring for yourself, which we all need to be doing. And college students definitely need to learn because a lot of their care was done by their caregivers, right? But then self-compassion is, no matter where you are, how are you treating yourself? Are you treating yourself with the same kindness that you would a good friend?
Yeah.
And that is something that we need to develop as well. There's a lot of good research on the benefits of self-compassion in terms of our resilience and our ability to stick with hard things.
It was one of the things, Diana, when you know, remember, sometimes I don't remember lockdown and COVID and all that kind of stuff, but I think it was a missed opportunity one of the bits of advice was we should be singing happy birthday when we're washing our hands. But I think we should have been saying, you know, compassionate things to ourselves at that kind of moment, because it really was a hard time. And that idea as well, in that inner compassion or self-compassion, is about that times are tough. There are times that are tough, because when kids go off to university, one of the things that they're often told, it's going to be the best years of your life, you're going to have a great time, you know? And then when they go and it's not, or they find out that they are really tough, they start to think, there's something wrong with me. So there's a kind of narrative there that is, I think, a compassionate one, to say there will be times that will be good, but there'll be also times that will be really hard. Mm-hmm. So that thing around common humanity, I think, that Kirsten Neff would talk about, that life is, there is a struggle here. It's not all going to be great.
Right. Yes. The three components of self-compassion, when they look at it in terms of the research, are kindness.
Yeah.
Mindfulness. So actually, are you aware that you even checked in with yourself that you are experiencing hardship, or this is hard, or do you have awareness of your own emotion system? And then common humanity, which is everybody struggles at some point. There's a really simple practice that I like to do with clients, or it's called the Just Like Me practice. And it comes actually from the Buddhist practice. And what I encourage them to do is, and you could do this if you were a student in the dining hall, right? Or just walking across campus.
Can you do it for us right now?
Yeah. So what you would do is you would find someone that you notice and just look at their faces, you know, kind of check them out as you're walking. And you would say, just like me, this person is struggling with something. Just like me, this person has things that keep them up at night. Just like me, this person has things that they love, that they're super excited about. Just like me, this person feels left out sometimes. Just like me, this person was a kid at some point, a little one, and had dreams and hopes. And just like me, this person wants to be happy.
Yeah.
And when we see that this is just our common humanity, that component of compassion, it helps us, one, not feel so separate and alone in our struggles, but two, it kind of lowers that facade that we feel like we have to put on. What's really interesting is that when we feel bad about ourselves, or we're struggling or having a hard time, that's often when we are both meanest to ourselves, most critical, but also when we tend to isolate and hide those struggles. And so we're blocking the compassion from others, or the kindness from others, and we're also blocking it from ourselves. So that Just Like Me practice is one that I like to do a lot. And I offer it to college students also, because I struggled so much in college. I struggled so much in graduate school. And I've had a very successful career. I've done fine. I do what I love now. And it doesn't mean that your life is over. It actually can be the compost, the soil, from which a lot of growth can happen if you open to it and if you connect with others around it.
Mm-hmm. And so you just mentioned there a little bit your struggle. Sort of what do you think helped you through that? Like, because I'm sure people like to hear, people like to hear the stories when we were interviewing students about what helps them through and what's kind of been helpful, you know, to them to kind of stay at university and whatever. What helped you, Diana?
Well, I think one thing that helped me was actually that I didn't stay. I needed time off. I wasn't quite ready. And I didn't know I was not quite ready until I was a month in. So I went to a very prestigious college prep school. And the whole, like you said, like the train was, you have to go to college and you have to go to a certain college. And these ones are the ones that you're supposed to go to, because it's going to look good on our map when we put it up in the hallway and we announce what every school, every kid's going to, right? So I was primed to have this expectation of what type of school I was supposed to go to. And I never really asked inside, what type of school do I want to go to? Where would I thrive? Where is it that I want to be? And I really shoved that part of myself away. So I went to a school that I think was maybe not the right fit for me. And I had an eating disorder as a high school student. And then I ended up relapsing when I was in college. And the thing that was really helpful for me was the permission to withdraw. and to regroup and figure things out, and then find the school that was right for me later. But also when I was in a better fit for me, I did a lot of things differently than what other college students did. So I wasn't a big partier. I went to University of California at Santa Barbara, which is a big school. And back in the day, it was like a party school. I mean, we're right on the beach. Kids would go down and surf during the day. They'd party at night. And I was always really kind of academic and inner nerd. And I found roommates that fit for that, you know, that I charted my own path. I found professors that I was really interested in and got into some of their labs and some of their research. And then my mess became my message, because what my undergraduate career ended up being was biopsychology and really doing sort of my own inner exploration of the biological and psychological factors that contribute to well-being. And then it was matching, like my own recovery and my schooling was matching. So it was the permission to chart a different path, to not have it be a big shameful thing that I was doing something different. And I think also learning a lot of, at that time, mindfulness practices, yoga practices, ways to regulate my own nervous system that worked for me.
Yeah. And my guess, there's not a lot of comparison going on at that point with you and other people. We have to kind of drop that somehow. And yeah, it's such a part and parcel of our young adults' world about in social media, isn't it? About comparing. Yeah.
Well, comparison is an evolutionarily beneficial skill, right? So we do need to compare ourselves to some things sometimes to keep us on track, right? It becomes problematic when that comparison is laced with self-criticism or judgment of self or judgment of others. So I don't see comparison as all bad. And what I do see in terms of the problems around compare, because sometimes I compare myself to someone to inspire me. Like I was at an exercise class this morning and there was a woman there that was super strong and she was lifting a little bit of a heavier weight than me. I'm like, I'm going to try that. I think she tried it. I'm going to try it. That's a useful comparison. But I wasn't like, oh, I'm so weak. Look at her. She's so strong. I'm such a loser. And again, you can just hear the tone of it and the functionality of it. And what we want to do is to become a little bit more sophisticated in how we're working with our own minds, that our minds aren't always the thing that we want to trust.
Yeah.
We can train our mind to be on our own side. But when it's not on our side, we can let our mind just do its thing and choose to act from our values. So the way that I worked with comparison in college, I mean, I think I still did compare myself, and I still do, and I can still, I'm just human. So I'm a psychologist. I'm, you know, compare myself and find myself being self-critical or judgmental, you know, all the time, from time to time. But I don't slip into it or let it become a hole in which prevents me from engaging in the world in the way that I want to engage. Yeah. And that's what I would encourage students to start to be more flexible around, which is noticing your comparing mind. Sometimes it's helpful, sometimes it's not. When it's helpful, use it. When it's not, let it pass on by.
Yeah. And that is a great question to yourself, isn't it? Is this helpful for me or is it hindering me? You mentioned there a little bit. Well, one thing lovely that you said was, my mess became my message. That's wonderful. Yeah. Say a little bit more about that then.
Well, I think some of my mess centered around, and this is what I write about now a lot in Wise Effort, is that we all have gifts and talents, and everybody has unique aspects to who they are, their emotional intelligence, their interests, their ways of being in the world that are really like their unique genius. I call it genius energy. I know that's sort of a strong thing to say, but I don't mean genius in terms of like intellectual genius, like Einstein. I mean the thing that makes you, you.
Yeah.
And what can happen is that can actually, when not honored and when not directed by your values, can actually turn into a mess. You know? So for me, my mess was my emotional sensitivity. and my persistence. These are some qualities about me. I am very tuned into other people's feeling states. Mm-hmm. And I'm also incredibly persistent, like stubbornly can get things, really hard things done. And those qualities can be very beneficial to me, but also when planted in soil that isn't supportive of them, or when I don't direct them with my values, they can lead me into a mess. So that could be staying in a school for too long that wasn't the right fit for me, or being really emotionally sensitive to the people around me and not listening into my own self. And so it became my message in the sense that I started to look at, okay, how can I help people identify what their strengths are, what their unique talents are, what their gifts are, and then use them in a way that is aligned with their values of how they want to be in the world, and actually put them in the right places so that they can really thrive. And college students are, I just feel like, or university students, as you call them, it's such an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Such an opportunity to discover yourself and the places that you think that are a mess. Maybe they're not a mess after all. Maybe there's little nuggets in there that you could use to have be your offering that could be of service to the world, even just beyond you.
So I think we're talking about having a very wide view about who you are when you're going off into this transition of college or university, and understanding your strengths. And maybe you talk a little bit about values. How would you start to, Diana, help somebody, kind of this 18-year-old or whatever they are, who is going off to university? How would you help them think about what their values were?
Well, first I just would define values, because I in the way that I define values, it might be a little bit different than other mm-hmm. definitions, that I define values as the ways you want to show up in the world that are dynamic and have no end point and can mm-hmm. happen anywhere, anytime, right? Yeah. So if you think about yourself when you are at your best, showing up how you want to show up when you're with your friends and you feel pretty proud and good about just you, how you're being, the qualities that you're bringing to that, what words would you put to that? And so some people may say things like, well, gosh, when I'm at my best, I'm like really brave, or I'm really adventurous, or I'm really kind, or I'm really honest, or I'm really humorous. I mean, everybody's different. So your values are like, you know, favorite colors. Yours may be blue. Mine may be purple. Purple's not better than blue. Yeah. So that's the first thing I want to say, is that your values are like a compass of how you want to be. And how you can find your way to them are different paths. One is, if you look at your life right now and you look at your day, maybe even just look at yesterday and ask yourself, gosh, when was it that I felt this sense of vitality, of a sense of energy, and a sense of being at my best?
Yeah.
Like, when was that for me, and how was I acting? And then you could also look at the flip of that, of when did I have that inner cringe of like, oh, that's not how I want to be. I really hope that didn't get caught on a camera. You know, that inner cringy feeling of out of alignment. And it really is like a bodily sense, not embarrassment as much as just, you know, for yourself that that's not really how you want to be.
Yeah.
And those can be two indicators, vitality versus cringe, of getting a sense of you. And then if you boil them down, you know, to a few words, there's different values lists out there. I have some examples in the ACT Daily Journal. I have some examples in my book, The Wise Effort. But once you can get them down to a few words, then you can start to use those as tools to guide you mm-hmm. in your day. And one of the exercises that I'll have clients do sometimes is I'll have them pick maybe one or two that they want to focus on. So for example, with you, Elizabeth, if I wanted to focus on, I could focus on one of my values is being present.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would write that down on a sticky note, call them post-it notes. I don't know if you call them post-it notes, notes, and put that being present somewhere where you'll see it, like on your laptop or I love to do it on the bathroom mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And in the morning, you can make a commitment. I'm going to be present today whenever I can remember this. And then at night, instead of rehearsing all the ways in which you screwed up or all the embarrassing things you do, I want you to rehearse, when was I present today? So that you're starting to reinforce yourself. Oh yeah, I was present with Elizabeth on that podcast when I paused and I looked at her face and I remembered that we're friends and we're here to help people that we care about, right? Yeah. So that's the practice of bringing values to life in the here and now, because that's where they exist, is just right here and now.
And I think that's a lovely kind of making sure that you're acting it out, that it's not on the shelf somewhere, that it's acting. And actually, at the weekend, I went to a lovely gallery in London, and there was an exhibition by this Australian performance artist called Lee Bowery, and his kind of motto was, and I took a nice picture of it, was "If in doubt, go out." I loved it because it's very kind of like he's obviously reminding him what to do, but it's very action orientated, isn't it?
Yeah, like,
do this thing, just do it.
So that's
our values. Tell me a little bit more about, explain to us a little bit more about this idea that you've got, a lovely idea about wise effort. And
well, wise effort is actually, it's a term that comes from Buddhism. It comes from the Eightfold Path of Buddhism. It's one of eight things that they recommend that you do to become enlightened, but I've secularized it. It's not, I don't use it in the Buddhist sense, but it's about energy use and life force use. We all have energy within ourselves, and then we can choose how to use our energy. Are we using it in ways that is depleting, that is harmful to ourselves or others? Or are we using it in a way that, you know, aligns with how we want to be in the world, our values, and what matters most to us? And from moment to moment, we get to choose where we're putting our energy, our life force. So with wise effort, there's sort of three practices that I encourage people to do, which have to do with first just getting curious about that for yourself. You know, oftentimes we're just on autopilot. We're on the moving walkway at the airport. We just get on and then we find ourselves to the gate, right? We don't see that there's a lot of different ways to get there, right? You could walk, you could run, you could jog, you could crawl, you could, there's lots of different paths. So the first is just to notice, okay, how am I using my energy today? When I'm planning out my day, am I just in the autopilot of my day? Or am I asking myself, what if this were my last day, how would I live it, right? Mm-hmm. And we also need to get curious about what gets us off track. So there's lots of things that can get us off track from wise use of our energy. We can get into self-stories about ourselves. We can hold on too tight to things. We can be running away from discomfort.
Yeah.
So that first step is get curious. And then the second step is about opening up to possibility, opening our minds, opening our hearts. And then the third step is focusing our energy, putting it in the places that really matter to us. And those steps could be applied to just your day, but it could also be a life plan, a life design to be wiser with our efforts.
And I guess as well, in the context of what we're talking about today, is about your time at university or college.
Yeah.
About having a really focused 3, 4, 5 years or whatever you're going to do about, how am I going to be the student that I want to be? Am I going to get the things that I want out of this experience really to be useful?
Getting curious about what throws me off from that.
Yeah.
You know, because again, that cringe factor, right? So what is it that when you have a day that wasn't how you wanted it to be, was happening internally for you? A lot of times we blame things on external circumstances, and there's a whole lot of external circumstances that are working against you as a college student, I guarantee it.
Yeah.
But we don't have as much control over those as we do our inner circumstances. So am I just believing things to be true without questioning them?
Mm-hmm.
This is the time to question everything.
Yeah.
Question everything.
Yeah.
Am I not going, like that artist recommended, am I not going because it's going to be uncomfortable or I'm scared or, you know, it's out of my comfort zone? This is the time to practice being outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
So that your comfort zone gets bigger. The more you practice stepping out of your comfort zone, the bigger your comfort zone gets, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are the skill sets for college for sure, but college is just a microcosm for life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember when my kids were, the, you know, from age 0 to 1, everything that happens, right? You have to learn how to crawl. You have to learn how to walk. You're already you're starting to talk, right? Yeah. In just 1 year, all these things that happen. Well, guess what? College is a lot like that. The rapid growth that happens in those early years is happening right now, but it's happening on your inner world, not your outer world, like a little baby does, right? So it is so profound.
Yeah.
What you're doing in terms of your brain, your skill sets, your emotional intelligence, like all these things are developing at a rapid rate. So you want to be wise about that development, just like you're wise about that. You know, parents were wise about that development early on. They fed you the right foods. They made sure that you were, you know, in environments that had a lot of good stimulation and, you know, mental, emotional development. So, yeah.
And this time you're more in charge of it, aren't you, as the student? You're in charge of doing, you know, some of that stuff, aren't you?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Anything else you can tell us about wise effort? You know, I guess sometimes we can't be wise all of the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think even just that question of what does it mean to be wise and how do we get wiser? Yeah. There's been a lot of psychological research in terms of this, but there's also, you know, wisdom is something that's been studied through the ages, right? And if you look at it from a psychological perspective, people don't necessarily get wiser just because of their chronological age.
Yeah.
We can all think of some older people that are not the people that we would go to ask for major life decisions, you know, to be made. And then you could, you know, I have a 12-year-old son who is by far way wiser than me in a lot of situations, right? So older doesn't mean wiser.
Yeah.
And being smart doesn't mean that you're wise. Right? There's lots of clever, smart people, the people in your classes that are raising their hand and have all the answers, but again, may not be the wisest. Mm. So what is it that makes us wise? And the way that you know, I define wisdom is that wisdom extends beyond just you.
Yeah.
So wisdom is this combination of, yes, factual knowledge, procedural knowledge, you know, all of the book smarts that you've developed, as well as, you know, the heart and the virtues, right? But it's not just you alone. You can experience wisdom on your walk across campus by looking up at the sky and seeing some birds and some trees. There's wisdom there that you can lean upon. Nature has wisdom. There's the wisdom of your ancestors, right? So your parents, your grandparents, their grandparents, parents, all of that is stored in you at a cellular level, and you can lean on that too, right? And then there's wisdom of the collective, that we are together, you at your university, you in your class. There's a larger kind of interconnected thing that's happening there, the culture of your university that is wise, and wisdom of your, if you have a spiritual practice. So the good news about wisdom is that you don't just have to get older to get there. It's already available to you right now. Mm. It is helpful to know what helps you tap into that wisdom and to start to develop things that help you tap into it. So for me, the way that I develop and tap into my wisdom is by having a morning practice, a morning ritual where I have some quiet time with myself. But it's not just with me. I read, you know, I read other people's books that are inspiring to me. Mm. I listen to meditations. Mm-hmm. I tap into wisdom by going for walks and runs in nature. I tap into wisdom by calling friends. So thinking about things that could help grow that for you, because when you identify like this, like, okay, I know how to get to my wise place, then you can start to direct your efforts from there. And that's wise effort.
Yeah. And I like that, the wise bit about all that complexity around it, but I also like that word effort in it. That it's, you know, usually it doesn't just come on its own, does it? You have to, it's practice, isn't it? It's leaning into these things, it's noticing things and doing stuff when it's making sense to you and learning what's working and what's not working in that way.
Yeah.
Gosh, there should be a university course, wise effort, shouldn't there? A degree.
Oh gosh, that'd be good.
That would be good. If you were going to give some college-bound students some bits of information or wisdom like this, or, you know, some bits of advice, and I'm going to say three, but it doesn't need to be three. But if you were to give them some bits of knowledge to share from you, What would you say, Diana?
I think the first bit of advice is checking how you're talking to yourself. And there's like a little four point practice just to ask yourself, is this kind? Is this helpful?
Mm-hmm.
Is this a good time? Sometimes we're talking to ourselves when it's not a helpful time to be talking to ourselves, like at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Right?
Like.
Yes. And hold on, I'm going to forget my last one. Is it kind? Is it helpful? Is it timely? Oh, and is it true?
Mm-hmm.
So begin to question your own mind.
Yeah.
The second piece of advice that I would tell college students is don't question your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you can trust it. You can trust that whole body. Yes, you can trust that heart place inside of you that knows a lot about you and a lot about the world and that is already very, very wise.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll leave it just at those two pieces of advice.
Question your mind,
but trust your heart.
Because I guess when you go off somewhere new, knowing where you've been before, knowing it really well, your heart and your head are full of doubt, aren't they?
Yeah.
So actually kind of make sure that you're supporting your mind and supporting, you know, listening to your heart are really good things to do.
Yeah.
Diana, I have so enjoyed talking with you today. Wise effort is something that I think needs to be kind of spread to, of course, we're talking about university college students here, but spread like you're doing to a lot more places. But I think if there's a time for wise effort, it is in times of change and transition, isn't it? In particular, when there's openings of new opportunities and worries that exist alongside those as well. They're both there, the excitement and the worries. Thank you so much for that. And Diana, are you venturing into this kind of thinking about supporting? I know you said that you worked as in a university before. Is it something that you're exploring a bit more for yourself in this kind of arena?
Yeah. More recently, I've been working with college students through a project that I'm doing across 10 UC campuses. It's a research project on supporting college students on resilience skills. And so I'm a mindfulness teacher in those at UCSB, but I'm also interested in working with parents and educators, going into actually the high school level as well to support them in this transition, everything through the application. How do you have wise effort in your application process and not just get in that burned out, pulling teeth, fighting mode, right? Actually, some wise effort into how you're applying to these schools and carrying that through to the launch into the school and the transition. So I'm interested in sort of both sides of that, in part because, I mean, just for so many reasons, I find that college students in this age, they are our future and they are our hope. Mm-hmm. And they're also facing so many challenges that they did not ask for.
Yeah.
So many stressors that they have inherited. Our mess is their message, right? So I feel a responsibility and also just a real heartfelt desire to work with this age group. Plus, I have emerging college students in my households.
I think you're right. They are our futures. And, you know, if they're going through this kind of space of learning, you know, we want them to be really successful. We want them to do this next bit of their life well, not just for them, but for the collective of us all. Diana, thank you. Thank you, Diana.
We hope you enjoyed the interview with Diana, where she talks of wise effort-focused work with college-bound students and those who are new to university life. She reminds us that it's a time of rapid growth and opportunity for young adults with the need for intentional care. Diana generously shares her experiences, encourages self-reflection, and leads us in a meditation practice that connects us with others. She also focuses on preparing the practical and psychological ground to prime students for success. She talks of the role of self-care and self-compassion,
She shares how she charted her own path at college, with her mess becoming her message. She helps us explore and live values as a guide to being your best. And with wise effort, she helps us be curious about where we're putting the energy in to do the things we want to do. Dr. Diana Hill is based in Santa Barbara, California. She's a clinical psychologist, international trainer, and sought-out speaker and leadership coach on wise effort and acceptance and commitment therapy. Her website, drdianahill.com, has a wealth of resources and information. Her podcast, Wise Effort, is a really great listen. She has a number of publications, including an ACT Daily Journal and the Self-Compassion Daily Journal, and both could be useful as self-study guides in the move to university. Her new book, Wise Effort, will be available in September 2025.
And now for the legal bits. The information contained in this podcast is for information purposes only. The content is not intended to act as a substitute for professional advice. Please do not delay in seeking professional help for any medical or mental health condition. Use of the information in this podcast and associated materials is at the user's own risk.